So to be a good leader, you need to be obsessed by the outcome, and you need to ensure that everybody understands the level of quality you're expecting. And I think that's really what we've done so well at Lightspeed is, you know, we never fail.
Welcome to the Super Managers Podcast, where we interview leaders from all walks of life to tease out the habits, thought patterns, learnings, and experiences that help them be extraordinary at the fine craft of management. Our goal is to bring you the lessons and the insights so that you don't have to learn through your own mistakes, but so that you can shortcut your way to being a great leader. This podcast is brought to you by Fellow, a software platform that helps managers and their teams collaborate on meeting agendas, track action items, and turn chaotic meetings into productive work sessions. Check it out at www.fellow.app. Hey, fellow managers and leaders, I'm Aiden, and I'm the CEO of Fellow.app. Today, we have a special guest, JP Chauvet, who is the president of Lightspeed POS, a publicly traded technology company with more than 1,000 employees across the globe. In today's episode, JP shares a valuable lesson he learned very early on in his management career that has impacted his servant leadership style today. He explains the importance of tying workplace culture with outcomes to create high-performing teams and why everyone should know the reason behind decisions being made. JP shares how he uses data to set benchmarks, and he even gives us an inside look at his weekly business review meetings with his team. If you found this episode helpful to your leadership journey, let us know by using the hashtag supermanagers and make sure to give us a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice. Now, without further ado, here's JP Chauvet on episode 60 of the Supermanagers podcast. JP, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
JP, it's really good to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to it. You have had a very extensive leadership career. You've worked at companies like Atex, Ensign, Exeosoft, and obviously now you're the president at Lightspeed. So there's a lot that we want to talk to you about today, but I thought that a good place for us to kick off is to rewind and say, in your entire career, has there been a memorable boss or a leader that you've reported to, whether good or bad, that you have memories from or that you recall?
Yeah. So my one of my first bosses was probably my best. So it was at France Telecom, and at the time, I just graduated. I was in product management, kind of weirdly enough, and at the time we were doing specifications, and it was the first internet services. And this guy was called Osman Sultan. He was half Lebanese, half French. And we were in France Telecom Multimedia, so we were growing the company like crazy. And probably my most memorable and taught me a lot about leadership and people.
So what was it that you think he did particularly well, if you remember?
I think ultimately there were two things. First, I think he made me believe in myself. So he was encouraging me to make decisions. And so he was empowering me basically to do a good job. And he let me just run with what I thought was right. And then we had a very strong personal relationship. So he was kind of a mentor, and very quickly he became someone I would look up to. And I knew he would be here to course correct, but without the negative sides of course correcting. And, you know, it was more of a supporting and uplifting relationship. So I did a lot of mistakes, and he helped me out and helped me see the reality through all of this.
Yeah, so you said that he helped you believe in yourself. Was there anything particular that he did that, you know, basically helped you believe in yourself?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you're, it was my first job, so I was trying to be good, and I think I was very driven, so I wanted to succeed. But, you know, you're full of doubts, and you're learning. And so, I mean, I was product manager of a very small group. And every time I came with ideas, he would support the idea and say, yeah, that's a great idea. Just try and do it, but be careful not doing this mistake and this mistake. But he basically let me run with my ideas. And actually, I think that was the most rewarding for me. It was to see I implemented a lot of things that had a huge return on investment. So I think that's the first thing I do now when I lead people is I want them to own the decisions and grow. And so I think for that, it was just great to see someone who you go into a company, you're full of doubts and just is empowering you to, you know, make mistakes and learn and grow. And always here to kind of has your back when you're kind of lost.
You talked about when you're leading teams. Do you remember some of, you know, before we talk about how you lead teams today, if we were to dial back and think about some of the first teams that you were responsible for, what were some of your early management mistakes or things that you maybe don't do anymore?
Yeah, I think the first mistake is I had always very high standards to myself. And so I was under the impression that 100% of people inside of companies would be as driven as I was, and which is not the case. Now, you know that in companies, there are people that are more cultural fit and people that are more, you know, the high outcome people. And so I was a bit of a dictator, I think, in my first job. So it did stick well with the people who were driven, but those who were not as driven as me probably hated the relationship. So I tend, instead of trying to lift people, I would try and, you know, be more of an authoritarian leader, just saying you're going to this. And I realized very quickly that, you know, you need to think about other things than just outcome and think about personalities and how people work and how do you make people want to work with you. So I think I was so obsessed by the outcome that I wasn't really taking care of people. And I was just, I was a dictator, very simply put, and I was too demanding. And I don't think I was very liked by everybody. And I think I see it a lot, you know, at Lightspeed, we coach a lot of young leaders. And I think the nuances of people is probably the most difficult thing to get when you're a leader. And especially when you're driven by success, sometimes this success makes you almost scary, or this drive makes you scary. And so, yeah, I think I was just not good at it. And then the other problem I had is, I was leading people that were much older than me. So I was the youngest leader in France Telecom's history for on the digital side. And I was a director at 23 years old, which is kind of crazy when I think about it now. But, you know, all these older people were looking at me going, who's this guy who knows nothing about life and is kind of telling us what we should be doing? And I think then I realized, okay, it's not about telling, it's about supporting. And being a good leader is not so much about being a dictator. It's about helping people make their mistakes and lift. And it's a very different view, I think, than what I had when I started.
Two really interesting things you said. You said, focusing on the outcomes and not enough about the people. Do you think that those things are mutually exclusive, or is there like a way to make them work well together?
They need to work well together. So to be a good leader, you need to be obsessed by the outcome, and you need to ensure that everybody understands the level of quality you're expecting. And I think that's really what we've done so well at Lightspeed is, you know, we never fail. No matter how hard, you know, or how close we are, we just go the extra mile always. And I think, so that's one piece. So you need to, I think this is more of a culture. This is, you know, strongly ingrained values. But I think the way to get people to understand that is not by, you know, telling them you have to do that, but it's by explaining the why behind the this quest for the great outcome. And I think then what happens is when you have enough people that have that culture set, it's just so tightly ingrained into your culture that everybody just goes in that direction. But I think for me, I'm trying to think about it, but you know, when if you say to someone, do this, and I want you to do this, and if you don't do this, you're going to get fired. It's a very different message than, hey, this is our culture, this is who we are as an organization, and if you want to be part of us, this is the outcome we're expecting, you know. And so it's just the how you do it that's different. The objectives are always the same. It's the question is, how do you bring someone to want that as badly as you do? And that the way forward is certainly not to try and, you know, use scare tactics or be forceful without really understanding, you know, the why. I think it's fundamentally why we're doing this.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So if I understand it correctly, it's you don't have to change the outcome or sacrifice the outcome. It's just you have to understand on a people level, how to get them to buy into that outcome. And for everybody, it might be a slightly different version of that.
Yeah. And I think everybody learns by mistakes. So, you know, you're a young leader, you make mistakes, you adjust. And I think smart people just adjust. And so I think, it's funny because every young leader has always the same kind of, you know, side effects, especially when they're driven. And I think it's funny because in the early days, I was putting a ton of pressure on these leaders. And now I tend to say, look, don't stress. We're going to get there. You know, you've got time, you know, that, you know, a career gets built in many years and, you know, it has to be a sustainable career. So don't try and, you know, and jump the steps. And so it's funny because now I've become kind of the opposite of what I was when I was a young leader.
So that's really interesting. So for all those young leaders out there, say that are managing people that are more experienced than them, like what advice would you give them?
I think the biggest advice I would give is ask yourself how you can help the team and not how the team can help you, especially with the more senior. Don't try, you know, and know more than them because you won't. So I think so what people expect from a leader is someone that shields them and that supports them through what they're trying to build. So I think that's the biggest advice I always give is, okay, just ask your team how you can help them, how you can help them do a better job, how you can help them, how you can remove, you know, all the friction, how you can support them with their colleagues. A young leader thinks that they need to know everything and tell their teams what they should be doing. And I think a senior leader will question, how can I help my team? And will be very open and humble with regards to, you know, their teammates. And so I think simple things like, you don't have to know everything. And I think that's the other big thing with high achievers. They feel that if they don't know everything, they're going to be judged and they're not going to be respected. And it's like, you don't have to know anything. You need to be sure that you understand your strengths and you need to understand how you're going to help your team succeed. And so become a servant to your teams. And of course, now there's, of course, they need to follow the guidelines and your culture and what's your mindset, but be a helping hand. Don't try and tell people what they should be doing and don't try and know everything because you'll never know everything.
Yeah, I really like that framing. This just not what they're going to do for you, but what can you do for them? And I think that's really wise advice. I really like that. Hey there, before moving to the next part of the interview, quick interjection to tell you about one of the internet's best kept secrets, the Manager TLDR newsletter. So every 2 weeks, we read the best content out there, the greatest articles, the advice, the case studies, whatever the latest and greatest is, we summarize it and we send it to your inbox. We know you don't have the time to read everything, but because we're doing the work, we'll summarize it and send it to your inbox once every 2 weeks. And the best news, it's completely free. So go on over to fellow.app/newsletter and sign up today. And with that said, let's go back to the interview. You know, one of the things that I did want to ask you about was, I think if I have it correct, did you join Lightspeed? Were they at 10 million in sales or did you join right when that was happening?
We were slightly under. We were around 6 million when I joined. But the story here is I joined when they received the first real, you know, VC. So seed round from Excel. It's very funny, Lightspeed as a story, because it was very profitable for the first, you know, until it reached 6 million. But then the market is so big that someone had to help Lightspeed scale. And that's really what I've been kind of helping Dax since day one, just put a lot of rigor because I've always grown companies. That's pretty much my DNA. You look at every company I've joined, we just scaled very rapidly. And again, you learn from doing this, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so I think, for me, the goal was to join Lightspeed, put a lot of rigor, and really help Dax kind of paint the picture of how we're going to scale this organization and what is the and you know, I'm sure you know that, but every company at every stage needs a different methodology and a different recipe. I call myself the chef, and that's what everybody at Lightspeed knows. I'm doing a soup, and it takes different ingredients to build a good soup at every step of the way of companies.
And you know, for the audience, Dax is the CEO at Lightspeed. And just for reference, just to give people a sense of scale, You joined when they were $6 million in sales, and roughly like what, you know, where is Lightspeed today?
Yeah, we're in the hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Yeah. And we were, I think I was employee 44. And now we're almost 2,000 employees.
Yeah, that's very, very impressive. Let's talk about some of the rigor and some of the systems and things that you put into place. Like, what was the first set of things that you started to implement? And for people who are, you know, at the stage and they're looking to bring in rigor into their teams and you know, it's hard because in the beginning you're focusing on just having the right product and getting the product market fit. And once something has started to work, like what are the immediate next steps? Like what's your playbook when you go into a company?
The smaller the company, the more everybody does everything. And as a company scales, you need to specialize. And I think that's really the job I did. So, you know, when I joined, giving you simple examples, you know, everybody was doing pretty much everything. And it's normal. And that's, you know, how a company is at that stage. But the problem then is what Lightspeed was facing is, and every startup faces the same problem, is you can't hire, because when you're when you need to scale, you need to hire a lot of people quickly. But if you expect everyone you're hiring to know everything inside of the company, it's not a scalable model. So I think that's the first thing we put in place when I got to Lightspeed, was to say, okay, let's hyper specialize people. And so, you know, support instead of being just, you know, all support supporting everything, let's put level one, level two, level three support. When you're in sales, let's break out SDRs from business development and from account management. And then we put in place, you know, onboarding. And so basically what you try and do, and even, you know, it's a very funny one, but our HR person was also doing billing. Yeah. And that's because you're like, okay, you want to do billing. And that's what happens when you're small. So the first, let's say 6 to 12 months, I spent my days just restructuring the groups so that people had a smaller scope. And the reason why we did that is then when you hire someone, instead of saying, hey, you got to do HR and billing, and all you need to do is know how to recruit, all you need to do is know how to do SDRs. And so just job definitions, rescoping the roles, and I think also looking at the hierarchy and looking at the, because I think often when you're small, you don't realize it, but the structures you put in place are maybe valid for small companies. But as you scale, I think the structure of the organization becomes the most important thing. Organizational excellence and ensuring that, it's a soup, going back to my soup, ensuring that you have the right ingredients and that everybody understand what their ingredient is, and then ensuring we just have the right balance of all the ingredients. And I think that's how we got to scale, is you structure, you measure. That's the other big thing I implemented, was measuring and making people understand it's not about feelings, it's not about impressions, it's about data. And so getting every team to figure out, okay, what are the 4 or 5 OKRs I'm going to look at? And at the time it was KPIs, but pretty much the same kind of logic. But what are you going to look at? What are the 4 or 5 things you need to measure every day? And from there, we built up kind of the whole company measurement. And then from there, it's very easy for someone like me to build the soup and say, okay, this data point is degrading because we don't have enough people. Let's hire one person there. And then just ensuring that we look at the right data points and that we have the teams that were segmented. And I think then it just becomes easier, because I strongly believe that, you know, you need to stare at a data point for it to improve. And if you have a data point that is, I don't know, at the beginning of Lightspeed, there's wait times, because our wait times in support, I was like, okay, what do we want to do? Okay, wait times should be under 2 minutes. Cool. Let's stare at that number every day. And then, you know, those wait times went from 15 minutes all the way to our numbers, because from the moment people know this is, and just share that with your teams, and from the moment they know what they need to improve on, and from the moment you give them, and you know, at the early days, we didn't even have a data system. I would have all the leaders print out the Excel sheet every day with all the names of the, because we were small, you know, we had maybe 10 support agents, but we would have all the average wait times. We would have the satisfaction rate per agent. And just doing that, it created a nice little healthy competition within the teams. And it forced us to become much better at those data points. So that, just sorry, long-winded answer, but that's really what we focused on at the beginning, was say, okay, let's narrow the scopes, let's measure, let's set, you know, the benchmarks. And then from that point, let's just improve every week. And what I launched also at the same time is a cadence. Some people at Lightspeed would say that I'm very rigorous with data, very rigorous with I'm obsessed by cadence. And so what we did also is we put in place a Monday morning weekly business review, where basically every leader of all the groups inside of Lightspeed were in there. They had their benchmarks, and we had to just look at all the data points. And from there, when a data point was not working, we would talk about it and we'd try and find solutions. So, and that was, yeah, for the two first years, I think that was a very painful, by the way, for all the existing people, because they're, and I think that's another big thing in my mind, is the leaders you have from 1 to 50, and then from 50 to 200, and 200 to 1,000, and 1,000, they're never the same. And I think that's where we've been very strong at Lightspeed, is we've managed to keep those leaders, but we coach them. We strongly believe at we strongly believe in building people from within. So that's the other big piece of our culture. And so if you look at I don't know, our CMO today at Lightspeed, Lori, she was a receptionist when I joined.
Oh wow, that's crazy.
She did pretty much every job at Lightspeed. But at the same time, we had a PhD in maths at the reception. I was like, why are you at the reception? And she's like, I just wanted to join Lightspeed. I'm sure this company is going to be successful. And Lori basically, and I think it's a very good example, she's done everything. She's done data. She's done systems. She's done SDRs. And so, you know, you build a true deep knowledge. And I think most of our execs have a very, and I think Asha, another good example, all, we're very lucky that a lot of our execs have been with us forever. And they understand very deeply the company.
So let's dig into this cadence a bit more. So you call it a weekly business review. And do you still have those today? Like, can you break down how long it is, who attends, like what gets discussed?
Yeah. So they've grown in time, because, you know, when you have five leaders and you're in one geography, and it's pretty straightforward. But now Lightspeed, we operate, you know, we even in Asia Pacific now, we have 400 people in Sydney and Auckland. So they've grown over time, but it's always been the same principles. The principles are, so it's 8:30 every Monday morning, and in the early days it was 9:30, so it was an hour. Then it moved to 10, and now we're at 10:45. So we started at 8:30, and we go to 10:45, and really we review every single piece of the business. And so it's evolved over time, because at the beginning when we started, it was purely direct. So we had functions, and every functional leader would report.
And so what happens? Like, do they just come in and say, here are my numbers, here's what happened last week, here's how we're tracking against goals?
Over time, I think it's something like close to 20 people now that do data. So we have Looker is at the core of everything that we do, and we have, you know, automated dashboards. In the early days, it was manual, so people just show up with their Excel sheet. But for me, the most important was to have the cadence always on the same data set, because you need to have the benchmark, you need to look. And what happened over time is we added a number of data sets. So now, I mean, yeah, we could go on. I mean, every group now has so many data points that it's becoming a bit unmanageable. So we went through this phase of more and more and more. Then we started opening offices in Europe. So then what we had was the beginning of a matrix. So we had the functional leaders, and then we had the geographies. And that went all the way to about 6 months ago. So, you know, first 2 years, let's say it was just direct, and we started having Europe. And now we just reorganized about 6 months ago, where now we have three ways of looking at the business. We have the functional way of looking at it. Then we have what we call GMs, and these are people in charge of all the industries in where we operate. So these are basically mini CEOs at Lightspeed of every industry. And then we have geographies. So it's become, let's say, more and more complex. And actually, we went through a phase of building a ton of data sets, and now we're back to, okay, let's simplify, because these meetings are too long. So what we do now is we've found, I think, the right balance of data sets. But it's like, if I'm in sales, it's going to be, how am I doing month over month, year over year? It's going to be looking at LTV to CAC. It's going to be at looking at my cost of a marketing lead. It's looking at growth. And then what we do is every function. So if I look at marketing, it's growth year over year, month over month, cost of a lead. If I look at SDRs, it's qualify rates year over year, month over month. Then if I look at sales, it's close rates, average ticket size. So it goes very, very deep, but every department, basically, no matter how deep it goes, fundamentally now we have company OKRs. So we measure every week against those. Then it all cascades down into all the regional OKRs, functional OKRs, and then into the industry OKRs. So, and we just review that.
So is everyone therefore throughout the meeting, like all of the leaders are also aware of every other part of the business? So it's not like people come in, present, and then they take off.
No, I think it's good that everybody's there because it creates, first of all, healthy competition. In a good way, you know, like right now, Australia for us is on fire. I mean, it's crazy growth over there. So Nick, who's the geography lead of Australia, then we have Adrian, then we have Mike and Sherelle for the US, for North America. It's great that they all see their numbers because it creates a healthy discussion also. It's like, oh, how come you guys are, you know, I think in Europe, we have close to 50% qualify rates. And so I think it just creates a healthy view on the world. And I think also the other thing for me is the bigger we become, the more you have distortion in communication. And so I think a lot of my time, and you know, I'm more of a parrot now than a chef, I just spend my days, you know, just doing meetings and repeating, okay, this is where we're heading, these are the OKRs, and ensuring that there's no distortion, because what happens with the, you know, very simply put, what it's roughly 10 a.m. here. Australia is going to bed now,
right?
And or right. Actually, they've been in bed now because it's 14, 15 hours, depending on the time of the year ahead. So it's very difficult to keep the messaging sound. And I think it's the most important thing in companies our size is communication and ensuring that everybody is aligned. So going back to your answering your question. I think it's good that everybody's on the same meeting, and that's a challenge just by itself because of time zones. But it's a very good thing because it ensures that at least all of our leaders are aligned and everybody sees eye to eye. And I think it's very important also that when I have strong or important messages to give, or so I'm going to start the meeting start with me giving my review of the week. What, you know, I looked at all the data sets on Sunday and my review is this is what's great, this is not what's great. And also use that to just talk about my feelings, you know, like it could be anything around, hey, I think communication is degraded or anything. And just getting everybody aligned, I think, is a very strong. So cadence and alignment, I think, is the most important thing at our stage, to just be sure that we're an army and we're all moving in and we're not, you know, we don't have distortion of messaging because it happens everywhere right now. And it's very important to keep everybody aligned. And so those meetings are very important.
Yeah. And I like what you said, which is like you turn from a chef to a parrot. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, with that many people, it makes sense that there would be distortion and repetition can become really, really important. So JP, this has been really, really insightful. I mean, what a great inside view of, you know, how you run a 2,000 person organization and growing. So one of the questions that we leave all of our guests with is for all the managers and leaders out there looking to get better at their craft, any resources, tips, or final words of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with?
I mean, I think it all starts with having a good leader and having someone who can be your mentor. And I have a number of people that I look up to. I'm on the board of you know, other incredible companies. And so I think that's the first step, is just don't be scared to connect with people who can teach you, because I think it's all learning. But apart from that, you know, there's, I just think that the best way to learn is the best way to be a leader is, as I said at the beginning, is try and think about how you can help your teams instead of thinking how the teams are going to support you. And I think then you just got to try, and it's difficult, but try and always be uplifting and try and be the you know, this person that brings everybody up. Because I think no matter how big or small the company, you know, when you're a leader, you have challenges every day. You have you have highs and lows every day and you got to deal with them. And I think trying to understand that everyone in your group is living the same scenarios and you have to be the, and maybe that's my style. My style is I'm always very positive and I always want to lift people up and I always believe in goals that are, you know, very, sometimes I can scare people actually when I'm doing that, but I think just try and stay positive and try and think about how to help your people. But it's, there's no secret sauce, quite frankly, to this. There's the only way you learn is by making mistakes. And hopefully you learn from those mistakes and you don't do them twice. And I think that's more important than any kind of advice I could give, or to learn from your mistakes. I mean, I know it's kind of a cheesy thing, but that's pretty much the story of my career, for what it's worth.
And a great place to end it. JP, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Aiden. Nice talking to you.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Super Managers Podcast. You can find the show notes and transcript at www.fellow.app/supermanagers. If you like the content, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe so you can get notified when we post the next episode. And please tell your friends and fellow managers about it. It'd be awesome if you could help us spread the word about the show. See you next time.